You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, the latest on efforts to provide mental health care to people just released from jail.
First, when I say the word economics, it's possible your eyes glaze over as you think of charts and equations and international banking regulations.
Our next guest set out to spice things up by sharing the economic lessons he learned when he joined the online dating market.
Paul Oyer joins us now. He's professor of economics at Stanford University's Graduate School of Business. His new book is Everything I Ever Needed to Know About Economics, I Learned from Online Dating. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. People glaze over when you talk about economics?
Well, I'm sorry.
I find that hard to believe.
I forgot you were listening when I said that. Before we delve into the online dating, a lot of us might think of economics as something out there in the newspapers, on Wall Street, something the government works with. Part of the point of your book, I think, is you want us to see it in our everyday lives. Why is that?
Well, I think it is in our everyday lives. And I think that a lot of people, when they think of economics, they think of two things that are very important but not central to a lot of us as economists. One is macroeconomics, so the things you talked about that are very, you know, interest rates and the state of the economy. I don't happen to do any macroeconomics. And the second thing is I think a lot of people associate economics with money. And that's fair enough. But to economists, money is just kind of a boring, convenient way to make transactions work better, but it's not interesting in and of itself. And so what I really liked about the topic of online dating is economics is, like you said, going on around us all the time. We're constantly trying to improve our situations, not necessarily our financial situations, although that's often part of it. And online dating gives you a chance to see that, even though there's absolutely no money changing hands.
Even though, prospective dates aren't paying each other cash, can we still think of online dating as a market?
Oh, it's a classic market in many ways. So there are a lot of marketplaces that are more traditional in that you just go there, you're buying and selling a commodity. What makes online dating a particularly interesting market, and it shares this with the job market, is that you have two sides that are trying to match each other and find and sorry to get really dry and technical, but potential life partners, just like jobs, are what you would call a differentiated good. No two are the same. And so the market's very complicated and interesting because you're trying to find you're trying to match parties rather than just sort of buy or sell the same thing at a liquid price or something like that.
You didn't just research this. You actually did it in your real life. But were you thinking like an economist right from the start, or were you just a guy at first and it started to dawn on you like, hey, this economics stuff I do could be helpful here?
It was exactly the way you put it at the end there. I didn't go in thinking, I'm going to go research this market at all. I went in saying, okay, well, I'd like to find a new girlfriend. And I started doing that. And then I said, oh, wow, this is a really interesting market. This is just like, you know, I'm a labor economist. And so the parallels to all markets were interesting to me, but the immediate parallels to the job market just kind of jumped out at me. And I couldn't help but sort of think of it in that perspective from then on.
Well, as you mentioned, this is a differentiated, I think you said, market, whether we're looking for,
good, yeah.
for a differentiated good. So everybody's different. A big challenge, I think, is probably when do I settle on what I've got with me right now? Love the one you're with, I guess, as the song says, versus holding out for the soulmate or Mr. or Miss Right.
Yeah, that's one of the very fundamental challenges in terms of that's where economics is really playing into your everyday life in terms of finding a life partner. You know, we have this romantic view of the world that I'm going to hold out for the one in quotation marks. Well, the one doesn't really exist. I hate to be
what?
The one to point this out. But what we need to do is hold out for somebody who's really great. You know, I'm not saying you should settle for the first person who walks through the door, but every day, unfortunately, we're trading off. Economics is the study of scarce resources, and a really important scarce resource in our lives is time. And so when you go out to look for your next life partner, you can invest a fair amount of time in doing that, but your resources, your time are not infinite. And, you know, you also have to, you know, take care of your house and take care of your kids if you already have them and things like that. So you have to trade that off. And at a certain point, you have to stop and say to yourself, you know what, I've got this partner or potential partner, and he or she is really great. And could I maybe do a little bit better or find somebody who is a better, more perfect fit for me? Sure. In the whole world, I know somebody like that probably exists, but I've got to, you know, I've got to get the car washed and these other things. And at a certain point, you just have to say to yourself, it's time to move on. And again, that applies when you're looking for a house. It applies when you're looking for a new appliance, something like that. There might be a better one out there, but at a certain point, you have to do the cost-benefit analysis and say, good enough.
So this is diminishing returns. I could invest more and more time, but at some point, the improvement I get out of that time is so minuscule, it wasn't worth the initial investment.
But you put that beautifully. I would agree with everything you just said.
All right. Hey, maybe I can be an economist after all. Forget this radio gig. Well, when somebody is first deciding, okay, I'm going to go on the online dating market, what's a good first step? What's a good economic piece of advice to get rolling?
Well, I think the first step is picking your website if you're going to do online dating. So if you're just going out in the market and you want to use traditional means because you like the face-to-face approach better, that's fine. But assuming you're going to go to an online market or an online dating, you're going to use online dating, you have to pick the right website. And I think economics would tell you want what we call thick markets. You're likely to do better in what we would call a thick market, which is just another way of saying a big market. Now, this is a place where online dating has some parallels to other markets, but some differences as well. We like to go to thick markets for things like stocks and bonds and commodities, you know, oil and pork bellies and those sorts of things as well. But there we like thick markets because they lead to more price competition and the buyers and sellers, there's more buyers and sellers. You're more likely to get the allocation of the goods to whoever can pay the most, and everybody's pretty sure they're not getting ripped off if the markets are big and liquid. In a differentiated good like the job market or the market for life partners, you want a thick market, which in this case means going to a big website like eHarmony or Match.com or something relatively large like that. And the reason for that is because all the goods are differentiated, if you will, you want a larger selection. The likelihood that we're going to end up that you're going to end up in a happier relationship is going to increase the more chances we have of finding somebody who's more like the type that you're going to fit well with. So a thick market, more alternatives lead to better things. Now, this can be problematic. Too much choice can be a problem. So if you go to a market that's too big and you're overwhelmed by the choices, that's a problem. But if the online dating sites can do anything to make their algorithms helpful in terms of narrowing down the choices once they've, you know, from the many, many options they could give you, then that works out efficiently. So anyway, the simple answer to your question is, everything else equal, choose a bigger dating site.
Can we thicken the market even further by doing more than one dating site at a time?
Yeah, I did more than one dating site at a time. And, you know, that leads to, now, not everybody's going to want to do that because there's additional costs. The more, each dating site has its own costs. You have to set up your profile. You have to do this and that. But each one, I chose a few different sites because despite the fact that you want the big, thick market, there are some quirks to the individual sites which have certain advantages as well for certain, I don't know, types of people you might be looking for or for certain ways you want to present yourself. So sure, use multiple sites, use big sites. That's what I would say.
A challenge in a lot of realms of economics, whether buying a stock or buying a used car, is the problem of limited information. You're only getting the info probably that the car salesman or the online dater wants to give you. How do you economically manage that challenge?
you learn the hard way eventually. No, you manage it. I think the simple answer is, so we can look at this from both perspectives. We can look at it from the perspective of how do you avoid how do you deal with the fact that people are going to be worried about the information you're presenting them with, and then how do you deal with it when picking partners? And I think from the perspective of how, you know, when I look at an online profile, I have to keep in mind that the exactly what you just said, that people are only giving me the information that they want to give, and that, in fact, they have incentives to not be entirely honest. So being somewhat skeptical when looking at an online profile, and yet at the same time keeping an open mind, those are very important in terms of thinking about what are reasonable options to look at. Now, when I think about, but I, in some ways, I think the more interesting part of information problems is how do I deal with the fact that when I create my profile, people are going to make assumptions about me based on what I put on my profile. And that's where I think, you know, you have to think not just about what do I worry about the other whether the other person's telling the truth or revealing everything. I want to also think about if I say certain things, what assumptions will people make about me? So an example I talk about in the book is, you know, I was when I first went on an online dating site, I was separated, my divorce wasn't final. And for a lot of people, they made assumptions about my readiness to enter a new relationship and things like that. And so you have to think a little bit about assumptions, or if you, you know, if in any way you reveal on your profile that you haven't had a serious relationship in a long time, people will make assumptions along those lines as well. So hidden information is a real problem in this market. And just like the job market or whatnot, sometimes we learn the hard way about that.
We're talking to economist Paul Oyer about his new book, Everything I Ever Needed to Know About Economics I Learned from Online Dating.
Coming up, our next guest studies the difficulties in improving mental health care to people just released from jail.
You can join the show at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and questions about online dating. If you have a question about how to apply economics in online dating or elsewhere in your daily life, call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email talk@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation after this look at headlines with Kristen Durst. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Bickert. We continue our conversation now with Paul Oyer, economist and author of the book, Everything I Ever Needed to Know About Economics I Learned from Online Dating.
And you can join in. Have you ever tried online dating? Do you have a question maybe about how economics could help you, or maybe a lesson you learned that could apply? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. 1234 or email talk@wpr.org. Paul, wanted to get into some more of the questions you raise and tackle in the book. We've heard the phrase before, opposites attract. Should we have that in mind as we're looking on online dating profiles?
Oh, God, I hate to keep ruining everybody's... this is why we're known as the dismal economics is known as the dismal science. Opposites may attract in certain dimensions that are harder to measure, but in the more standard manner, it's just if you look in the data, people end up pairing off with people that are very much like themselves. And this is true certainly in terms of class, in terms of race, in terms of income and things like that. You know, a lot of that comes from where do you meet your partner? Well, you might meet them through online dating, but you also meet partners through work and through education. And so we end up partnering off with people who look a lot like us in those dimensions. There's an economics term, positive assortative mating, and it just shows that if you think about almost any measurable trait in terms of any sort of socio-demographic type of trait, people end up on average with people who look pretty much like themselves. It's a little bit unfortunate because all this talk about, like President Obama the other night talking about a lot of discussion of income inequality. One of the barriers to income inequality, I think, is the fact that rich people marry other rich people, and that, you know, makes it harder for... So if you're a high school dropout, you're very unlikely to end up with somebody who makes a lot of money or has more education and therefore have an opportunity to move up in that manner.
But our personal online dating lives, you're saying, is not the place to try to break through that barrier?
Well, you could try, but at the end of the day, people don't, and I think they don't end up pairing off in that manner. Even I certainly wouldn't say you shouldn't try it. I'm just telling you that empirically, both on preferences for people like ourselves socioeconomically and demographics, those are true both in in online dating and who people are attracted to through on online dating sites, and then in any other sort of way that you look at how people pair off.
Email from Roxanne in Madison. I've used the site OkCupid several times with no luck. What suggestions do you have for trying to maximize your time by quickly weeding out potential partners without wasting your time by meeting them all?
Yeah, that's a really good question. That's a really good point. So that's the million-dollar question, if you will. So I would say a little bit of investment in time in terms of who you write to is very useful. So I've actually had quite a bit of success on OkCupid myself in the past, although I met my girlfriend on JDate. But OkCupid has these very interesting personality questions, which that was part of why I was very interested in them. But the answer to the question, I think, is two things to keep in mind is, one is when you're looking at the messages people have sent you and deciding which ones to respond to, I would put a little bit of the idea, an economist would put a little, through the idea of signaling, would put a little bit of weight on whether the person personalized their message. So if you just get a message saying, hey, I like your profile, I'd love to meet, you know, if you have other people you can respond to, I would ignore that one. I'd be looking for more like, hey, I looked at your profile. I'm also interested in basketball. I don't really like that TV show you mentioned, but, you know, I think that's funny that you do. Or, you know, something that shows a little bit of investment. That would be one thing I would think about. And then on the other side, in terms of who you write to and so forth, again, I would spend, rather than sending 100 messages saying, hey, I think your profile looks great, you know, send 10 that are a little more personalized.
Again, that sounds like the job market, as you mentioned earlier. If you have a bunch of very generic resumes in front of you and then a couple that are tailored to your workplace, which way are you going to go? The one that showed a particular interest in your workplace.
Right. I mean, so if the last email you just read had said, what can I do to improve my odds of finding a good job, I would say spend more time on 10 cover letters rather than sending 100 generic cover letters.
Talking to Paul Oyer about the economics of online dating. I know we have some online daters out there. Call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 to share your experiences. Maybe get some advice from an economist. Maybe not a place you'd have gone to look for it, but it could be useful. Hey, you mentioned JDate, and I was wondering, you mentioned the idea of going for big websites, dating sites with lots of people, but there are, it sounds like, a growing number of very specific websites to maybe reach for more people that might be better fits. How do you weigh those two options?
Yeah, that's a good point. So JDate is a Jewish dating site, and I went on it not because I cared much whether or not I'm Jewish, but not at all serious about it. And I didn't care that much about whether my partner was Jewish or not. But I went on it because in the area I live in here in Northern California, and when you're looking in the market for relatively educated people, which, you know, despite my argument that maybe we need less positive assertive matching, that's what I was looking for. JDate is a pretty thick market. There are a lot of people who are both Jewish and the types I might have been interested in. So JDate is specific on the one hand, but it's still a big enough, thick enough market. The things I stayed away from were, I'm a big tennis player, but I didn't see any reason to go on tennisdate.com, which does exist.
Really?
Because there's just not a thick enough market of people who are so interested in tennis that they would focus that on their search. So you have to think about the specialized sites that have done well are ones that are reaching a group that is both big enough and that cares so much about their partner being in that group. So things like Christian Mingles have been very successful. And some of the over 50 dating sites, which are more specific, those have also been quite successful.
So you want things that are deal breakers. If I'm a tennis player, exactly. I'm not, and somebody else isn't, I think we could overcome that difference in a relationship.
Exactly. No, exactly. So the deal breakers, and they have to, but it's even a deal breaker, if it's not something that everybody's going to think is a deal breaker, then it's not going to lead to a thick enough specific site.
We'll go to our callers now. We've got Kathy on the line in Cedarburg. Kathy, hi.
Hi.
What's your story?
Well, I met my husband through eHarmony, and I guess the reason I think it's interesting is because he's the first person I responded to and the first person that I met, and we were married within 3 months, and we have 3 children, and we're really happy. And I you know, I don't have a whole lot to compare it to since I was only on the, you know, e-dating or whatever for a very brief time.
So, Kathy, congratulations, first of all. And were you just really lucky, or were you just ready to settle on the first guy that came along online?
Oh, please. No, I was really happy. I was just, I think it was very much a situation of serendipity, and it just happened to be e-dating, so.
Well, it was serendipity, but it from an economist's point of view, I hear your story and I say, remember, you got to be in the market to succeed in the market. So, you know, you put yourself out there, you took the time to set up your profile, and sure, you got lucky. That's the way life works. I have my job because of some lucky things that happen. But, you know, if you hadn't sort of said, I'm going to go look, so you looked for a market that happened to work very well, and there was some luck in that, but at least you sort of went for it.
Well, thank you for the call, Kathy. Not everyone has that kind of luck up front. Suppose somebody's been on for a long time, they keep striking out. What do they do to evaluate maybe what they're doing wrong?
Ooh, that's a good question. Yeah, I think that's where you need to start thinking about the types you're so this is a time to go back and sort of do that self-assessment of what types of assumptions are people making about me. So the people who you end up, you know, trying with and not striking out, they probably have certain characteristics that for some reason your profile appeals to them, and you need to think about, and they make assumptions that you're a certain type that you are not. So you might want to then go back and think about, okay, how can I redirect? There's a hidden information problem. I'm a certain type that is, and it's not coming across in my profile, and how can I change that?
So suppose we've got success. We're getting ready to try to lock it down and get married. What should we be weighing before we make that decision?
Well, the thing you have to think about is, yeah, that's a good question. I think, you know, the general principle that you have to think about settling, to use the word that everybody hates. At a certain point, you need to do that. And exactly when is the right time to settle? That's where you need to use a little bit more of your own introspection and your own cost-benefit analysis about how long, you know, how well this is going to work out. I mean, the one thing to keep in mind is when you are locking in a relationship for the long term, how sure you are about it, you know, that there's your incentives change on that over time. So when you're very young, you should be much more picky.
All right.
Because you have a longer time with the person.
Paul, that's all the time we have. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks a lot for having me. This has been fun.
That was Stanford University economist Paul Oyer. His new book is Everything I Ever Needed to Know About Economics I Learned from Online Dating.